These guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Say that more slowly because I'm stupid.
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I think my agent did all the numbers. I got 2,400 hits in this league over 12 seasons and never been even had a hearing, let alone a fine, let alone a suspension. Had one call maybe 8 years ago from Brendan Shanahan when he was Department of Player Safety. Just kind of called me and said, "You're being an idiot. Stop being an idiot." And that seemed to be a pretty good reset for me. So if we're trying to, I don't know, teach a lesson or critique one out of 2,400 hits that I was trying to really avoid, and that's kind of been acknowledged as well, I don't know how effective that is. That's a small little decimal if you do the division. So
Flito Shinzawa in the Boston Globe today wrote that Backus' suspension discourages physicality, and that could hurt the league. I wish Backus and Fluto picked a different hit with which to stake their case. Because that hit was a little late. That hit should not be in the game. It shouldn't be three games. And I didn't think much of it when I first saw it. But that hit was way too late. You know, the head contact, I do agree with him, was kind of incidental. I think he did try and lay up. He did clip him in the head, so he's got to get something. But to me, the egregious part of it was just so late. I think there's other questionable hits that have been fined or suspended that they should, you know, use as examples. That one's not a great one because you can't have a league where you're hitting guys that late. But anyway, Murray, you agree that that ban discourages physicality in the league and is bad for the league?
Yeah, and I think the guys that use physicality like that are going to shy away to say, okay, well, am I going to get whacked a couple of games for a hit that's on borderline going forward in 2 to 3 games? Like, that's insane. And you have to consider the track record, too. That's the other thing that I think is going to discourage some of these physical players in the NHL. Like, okay, look at David Backus, who's played 12 years, has never been fined, never suspended, and because of this, it's 3 games? Like, that going forward would be something that I would think about if I was one of these type of guys.
So the 3 games is too high, but I come back to, as soon as it happened, I saw the replay say he's going to get suspended.
Yeah, I did too, but a game, that's it.
So that's fair, because I did not know that he had no history. I mean, literally none.
Not even a suspension. I mean, not even a fine. I mean, he just said it. The only thing he ever had was Shanahan calling him up saying, "Don't be an idiot," which might have been the fist across Canada, which is just so great when they were gearing up to play the Olympics one of those years, and Backus was named maybe he was the captain of the U.S. or, you know, he was named on the U.S. team. There were a run-up of games before the Olympics, and he took on Taves. He took on, I can't remember, he took on like 3 or 4 important Canadian players, and it was called Fist Across Canada to set up the Olympics. I'm like, that was awesome. Like, that's why I love the guy. And maybe that's when Shanahan said, "Stop being such an idiot." That would be my guess. When he was told to stop being in it, the fist across Canada thing. But he also said yesterday, we're getting in the way of policing ourselves. The next guy, and he's talking about the other night, the next guy asked me to fight from their team, a big character. I oblige and answer the bell. And he did. He fought a guy in Detroit and took a few blows. He says that used to count for something too. That's kind of being phased out and seemingly more as we go along, said Backus. Fluto Shinzawa writes, that's too bad. Backus's punishing style makes people watch. He says, but tooth-loosening checks and fights are going out of the league. This should translate to better health for hockey's inhabitants, but it will worsen the condition of the sport itself, one that stands apart from others because of its speed and ferocity. Under such conditions, head injuries are unfortunate but unavoidable consequences. Do you agree with that?
To a degree, yes. You're going to get some head injuries. That's part of the deal. You're going to get some of that. But I also think that there's a line there between what is necessary and what isn't. And so on the Backus play, look, I think it sucks that he got popped because he's led a clean existence in that league. But the fact is he went high and he was late. But suspension. And what I would say to Fluto is they're not taking it out of the game, Fluto. It's out. It's gone. I mean, again, how many guys do you see get hit anymore? I think the players have gotten a lot better at it, too, particularly as they get near the boards and a guy's coming from even the side.
No question.
They are so much better at making sure they don't drill someone and knock his head into the boards.
The NHL is in the entertainment business. The sport's customers enjoy physical play. The NHL Department of Player Safety is compromising the former by de-emphasizing the latter.
So this is, you know, this is where I feel like Bettman and the brass of the league are maybe lacking in self-awareness. Do you know what you are? You're not a sport for casual fans. I don't think you ever really are going to be that. It's such a niche thing, and you have such passionate fans, and this is one of the things that people want to tune in for, is this kind of, you know, hits and a little bit of violence. You take that away, you're going to help kill this sport.
Do you feel like the game has suffered?
A little bit. A little bit. I like the fight game a lot. And
it's always been part of it.
I miss it. Look, I've enjoyed the crap out of this season. I'm not going to pretend like it's been a bad season. And I've enjoyed the product. And, oh, by the way, goals are up. The puck's going in the net again. I don't know what the exact numbers are, but I mean, the Bruins just in the last couple, I mean, the goals are going in the net. You know, the thing with Pittsburgh the other day,
12 goals in that game.
The thing with Detroit the other day, I mean, I'm just looking at Bruins games. The puck is going back in the net. I'm not frustrated like I've been in past years with, like, you can't freaking score anymore. No, it feels like you can score. So a lot of these things have worked. The stick fouls and all that stuff, I think, has worked because they're scoring again. But I do miss the intensity and the back and forth, the physical, the dirty nature of it. I do.
So it didn't occur to me until you just said it, but this year I haven't missed it. And maybe it's just because the Bruins are playing at a fast pace, and they're scoring, and they're fun to watch, and they're relentless. But the pace of their games, oh my God, the pace of their games is awesome.
Yeah, but I still think you need that violence and occasional fight to set the tone. I mean, look what Chara did last Thursday against Pittsburgh. You know, like, even though it was almost unnecessary at that point, but that's, you know, I think that was a part of, like, all right, we're also going to establish ourselves here tonight to, like, push you around. Two-time Stanley Cup winner the last couple of years.
I also miss the build-up in between games. It's like, it used to be, if that thing happened with Detroit, then the next time you face him, Detroit calls up a guy, you call up a guy, and now we're going to have a thing. And there's going to be a couple things, and it's going to be a night. And, like, that's part of it. And that helps get you through 82 games. And it's like part of that. That was always loved that part of it. Who do they got? Who's there? Is Kordick still there? No. Who was there? Was it Probert? Like, who did they have? And we got, you know, whatever. We got Jay Miller. And, like, well, let's see what's going to happen now. And, like, that was a great part of the game. I loved it, even though it wasn't, quote-unquote, part of the game. It was just, it's a long grind of a season. And I just loved that element to the game. And now that is totally gone.
Yeah, goons are gone. The days of Bob Probert, Ty Domi, like, that's never going to happen.
You don't have a fighter. Yeah. I mean, it's left out. If McQuaid or Miller, it's your defenseman. You have a single forward that does that? I'm just trying to think.
I mean, Backes.
Backes. Is it? He's the
McQuaid's a tough SOB.
No, I just said forward.
Yeah, forward. He said forward.
So, you know, it's like, you know, they're gone. It's over.
And I don't have any concerns about the playoffs not being physical enough. Like, I'm sorry, I don't. And if that's the trade-off, if the players are saying, you know what, in the regular season we're going to soften it up a little, I can live with that. As long as the Bruins give you the product they're giving you now, I mean, I haven't missed it this year at all. They've been great to watch.
Fluto writes that personnel and strategy were already shifting the NHL away from physicality and toward speed, quickness, and sharp stick work. The league's disciplinary surveillance program is now a factor, too. It makes little sense for a player to jeopardize his paycheck and his lineup spot by initiating contact and having something go wrong with the hit. Fluto says the league will suffer as a result. And I agree with that from 10,000 feet. That hit shouldn't be the example they're using because it was too late. If they take Backes' hit out of the game, the league would be fine. I'm not going to miss that hit that came two full counts after the puck is released. But if the player had the puck on his stick and Backes was going in and he just got him high because he was reckless with where his shoulder was, it wasn't, I don't think Backes targeted him. I just think he got him there. And he wanted to lay a hit on a guy along the boards. And if he had the puck, I'd say, but he should almost get, you know, just a fine, just a call. You've got to allow guys to hit each other along the boards. The puck was long gone.
I mean, that was the point of emphasis in the video. It was that the puck was gone.
Says the trick the NHL is trying to execute is endorsing physical but safe play. These variables are not congruent. The NHL is dangerous. It's part of the reason people watch. So I agree with that overall point that all these leagues, football and hockey really is what we're talking about, is going to have to accept. Most importantly, the players are going to have to accept that you will get concussed and you will get CTE and you will get brain damage. You are not allowed to sue us. You can play these sports or not. No one is putting a gun to your head.
That's collateral damage. You know what you're signing up
you
for.
You smoke that cigarette, you're going to get lung cancer. We all know it now. That's it. You sign up, you're not allowed to, and I guess you are, but you shouldn't be. You shouldn't be allowed to sue the tobacco companies anymore. We all know it. You smoke, you get cancer. That's it. You're allowed to do it. Go nuts. God bless. But you can't, there's the onus is now on you. And I would say that for the players in the NFL and the NHL, the onus is now on you. If you don't want to play these games, don't play these games. That's fine. I respect that. If you don't want a mush brain, don't play. But if you're going to play, there is collateral damage here. You're going to get some head injuries. And so it's up to you whether you you can't sue the leagues anymore.
I mean, 10 years ago, there were between six. I just looked it up, between 650, 750 fights a year in the league. Last year.
Can I guess? So yeah. You're saying how many years ago?
So I'll give you the exact year, okay? 2007-8 and 2008-9. Those 2 years, 664 and 734 fights. So split the difference, 700.
Okay.
700 a year.
I'd say there's less than 300 now.
Last year, there were 241.
Thank you.
This year, right now, 295.
It's been cut in half.
So then this year's actually a little bit more than last year. The number's going to finish over 300 because they'll get five more, obviously. But it's been cut by more than that. I mean, more than 50%.
And I think it was a real part of the game. Like, your 2011 championship team, I think, led the league in fights. There was also Cam Neely's first year as president. That's the first year Cam Neely got control over hockey operations. Remember, the year before, you had the Mark Savard incident, where no one stood up for Mark Savard, and it felt like that was a sign of a weak team and a team that wouldn't stand up for each other. The next year, Neely takes over, and I think this is the biggest thing that he did, is I think he got in some faces or did something there, because the next year, they lead the league in fighting majors, and I think that was a part of who they were. And I miss it. Now, I think the league is fine. I think the games are good, and I enjoy the product, but I do miss that part of it.
I mean, in the final, they bullied their way to the cup.
It was a part of it in that final, too.
They really did.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Blunt force trauma! We're gonna run him right down their throat!
Felger and...
I'm a hypocrite.
Mass.
Who cares?
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
If it's personally trying to change my game, I think if there's one error in 2,400 hits, like I said, by the time I get 2,400 more hits... You know, I'll be long out of the game. So I'm going to keep playing my style. I've been able to do it cleanly, effectively, hard nose. You know, stand up. You know, we're I think again influencing, getting away from policing ourselves. The next guy that asked me to fight from their team, big character. You know, I oblige and answer the bell. And you know that used to account for something too. And again, that's kind of being phased out and. Seemingly more as we go along.
Look, I don't really think that the Bruins have enough to win a cup this year. I think it's possible if they go on a run that they will. But would you admit at the very least that if they do go on a run, that with a full load of healthy forwards, that Patrice would be more important no matter how good of a year Marchand is having for them to be able to actually pull it off?
You said Patrice Bergeron would be more important?
If everybody was completely healthy for them to actually win the cup and go through four rounds, don't you think he would be more important than Marchand?
I think, yes, I think he is. I think he's, but it's
okay.
Close. I mean,
okay, good, because then you just lost your own argument against me from last week, because I called and said that I'd rather have somebody like Patrice than a Sidney Crosby, because you just yesterday went on and talked about the last four best scorers of the last 3 years, and there were Ovechkin, who is the best scorer of our generation, who hasn't won Jack.
Sean, so yeah. You'd rather have Bergeron than Crosby?
I would rather have a Bergeron or a Kopitar or a Taves or a Datsyuk than Crosby, yes, because I think that those players are more likely to win.
Okay,
look
fair
at
enough.
Look at the four people that you named.
Let's
Ovechkin
just say,
hasn't won anything.
Sean,
Tarasenko hasn't won anything.
John, I'm not telling you that I want Tarasenko over those guys. Let's agree to disagree, okay?
No, I'm asking you seriously. If you were to build a roster from scratch that you wanted to try to win a
Sean, I'm
cup
not
with,
going to be shamed into saying that I would take Sidney Crosby. He's won three effing cups.
And they've been jacked every single year that he's been on there. Their power play is ridiculous. You could put anybody on that they have on their power play on any other team, and they would take over that position.
Agreed.
For whatever the team.
He's also won three cups, and he's never had a great goalie. He also won a cup last year without a number one defenseman. Yes, he's on good teams. He's a great player. Can we agree to disagree?
I understand that Letang was hurt last year, but you're not going to tell me that you would not take Pittsburgh's power play
over
any other team in the league during the playoffs last year?
Yes, and I would also take Sidney Crosby over just about any player in the league, including Patrice Bergeron. But if you want Patrice, great, take him. He's a great player.
See, but you have to admit that your opinion is wrong.
It's just an opinion, and I'm siding with the guy that's won three stinking cups. And he's probably going to win a couple more before it's all said and done. So I don't feel like an idiot on that one.
I mean,
sorry.
This guy talks about Sidney Crosby like he's Phil Kessel.
Or, yeah, he's just some sort of piece there.
You know, like he's a guy who just flies around in the offensive zone, you know, and scores from the faceoff circle like he's Ovechkin. It's, it's asinine.
And Pittsburgh does have an unbelievable power play. I saw the second best power play that I've seen this season last night. Philadelphia moves the puck beautifully on their power play. Like, that's a good, and they don't have near the talent. And that, but they do have talent. I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, between
Giroux Voracek, all those Simmons.
Guys. Right, yeah, like, they got talent, but it's not. That Pittsburgh thing is out of control.
I love Simmons. He'd be the, like, perfect Bruin. I love that guy.
Dakota and Braintree with the Celtics thought. Hi, Dakota.
So, Dakota Dama strikes again. I've been trying to convince you guys on Marcus Smart ever since that playoff series against Atlanta.
Don't talk to me about Smart.
You were trying to run him out of town, saying you were through with his game and all these ridiculous shots. You were part of that little that cheerleading crowd along with the guys sitting
really.
Next to you with no voice.
No,
yes.
Not really.
Okay, and even this early in this season, you guys were against him, looking to ship him out of town with anything under the sun. And I try to explain to you guys how one or two shots missed a game because of a bad shooting percentage means nothing in today's NBA for what he brings to the table for rebounding defense and possessions of the ball, okay? And I'm glad that you two Jamokes, okay, are finally coming around, and Maz is almost there, with keeping Marcus Smart because he's a vital cog on this team into its next NBA championship, okay? Last year, he shot 39% from three-point line, better than your Isaiah Thomas at 32%, okay? And after last year in the playoffs, I said the same thing. This guy is a winner, and you want him on your team.
Dude, we have a lot of know-it-alls who watch this show or listen to the show. Dakota, let me ask you something. I'm curious.
Including the two people who host it.
If Marcus Smart, but we're supposed to be. It's our show. if they need to include Marcus Smart in the package for contractual reasons or just the Pelicans want him to get Anthony Davis, would you let him go for Anthony Davis?
Yes. For Anthony Davis, I would.
Okay. Thank you. So at least we're not getting goofy. Right. And I think that, and I agree. I don't know why he's scolding me. I've been talking about it all year. Maybe he confused it because I just don't like the way Marcus Smart plays half the time. I mean, the faking, flopping garbage is just, I can't stand it. But I've been telling you about his value all season. I think it's obvious. I think it's fascinating how he can be such a horrendous shooter. And he's missing free throws last night, you know, that are hurting him. Like, how he can be such just an atrocious, natural offensive player and be so valuable to the team. I think it's an incredible story. I don't know how he does it.
I mean, I'll tell you, though, the free throws are a big thing for him, too, because last year he shot over 80%. This year it's 72.5, you know, not horrible. If he makes those and stays in that 75% range, it's good enough. Because if he can score near the basket or get to the line, there's at least something there.
Chris and Raynham has a Patriots thought here on Agenda Free Friday. Hi, Chris.
Hey, guys. I wanted to talk to you about this so you don't say Patriots fans weren't saying it before. I do think the Patriots, if they got an offer for a first and maybe a third or a fourth, should trade Gronk. It's very selfish what he's doing right now. And the reports that he won't be coming out till training camp, this could linger on. It's just ridiculous. And one of the reasons we won the Super Bowl 2 years ago without him was because we had time. They had time to plan for it. They had Bennett. If they plan for it, they can win the Super Bowl without Gronk. They just have to know now. It's going to screw him over big time if he retires or plays games every year. And as you said, I don't want this to become the Favre thing.
Okay, Chris, I mean, I think that's a fair point. How many Patriots fans do you think agree?
Oh, very few.
Right?
Because they love Gronk. They love him.
I agree.
Yeah, no. They love him. They'll, you know, again, Gronk can do no wrong. But he is screwing him over. Like, at some point, it becomes selfish. So if you want to retire, retire. I get it. I mean, I tip my hat to those guys. The Calvin Johnsons, the Barry Sanders. See you later. All the respect in the world for you for doing that. In the case, if I'm the Patriots, I draft a tight end. I would. I would draft one. It's time. Because with this guy, you can't be going through this all the time.
Chris in the car on the Patriots. Hi, Chris.
Hey, guys. Just thinking outside the box here. What if the Patriots wind up having to stick with Chung as their cornerback? Can't upgrade. Are there any names out there that you're aware of that maybe they could upgrade at the linebacker position for a rush passer or a run stopper or something like that?
Okay, so, I'm not well-versed on the full linebacker market, but let me ask you, a guy like Ogletree, Murray, were you aware of Ogletree there in L.A. who's he traded to?
He's traded to the Giants, yeah.
For, like middling considerations, like a fourth and a fifth-round pick, something like that.
And they just gave him a four-year extension, I think, just this mid-season.
So the Giants gave up mid-round picks.
Yeah. No, he was a team captain. He's a good player. He's a solid linebacker.
So if you say, who should they go target in the linebacker group? Like, I don't really know, but that feels like a perfect candidate.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if he's available. One guy that immediately comes to mind is Levante David, who's in Tampa.
Yeah, I remember him. No, but Ogletree, like, why weren't they in on Ogletree?
Hell if I know.
Don't they need a piece like that?
Probably because of the money. Again, they gave him a four-year extension at a ton of dough, and it's probably one of the reasons because of cap issues that they ended up moving on from him. But still, that's a guy. I think he's been in the league 5-6 years. He's still in his 20s. You know, team captain, solid tackler. Doesn't really miss much time. There was one season I think he missed like most of it because of a bad injury. But other than that, he's a solid pro.
You know, don't ask me beforehand.
Who's the guy in the Bills again that wanted to come here?
Yeah, right, that fella.
Preston Brown?
Fine.
Yeah.
You know, I'll know it when I see it after the fact. You know, if they sign another Marquise Flowers or Cassius Marsh or Kyle Van Noy, one of these guys, no. No.
I need a guy that's legitimately getting reps at the position he's supposed to be playing, not a special teamer.
That's what
Flowers was.
Exactly.
That's what Cassius Marsh was. Guys like that, like, no thanks. I don't want third stringers and special teamers anymore.
I can't remember. I think it was Phil Perry who wrote it the other day. The guy the Eagles had is up. Nigel Bradham. He's a free agent. He's a guy that would seemingly... I mean, look, they need linebackers. At this point, I'm not going to be picky. If the guy's got a pulse and he's on the field for most of the snaps, I want him. Compared to the garbage they have at the position, I mean, what are we going to do? Landon Roberts and Van Noy again? Holy crap, we might as well put you and Murray out there.
Felger and Maz.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Maz.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5,
the Sports Hub.
The Los Angeles Rams are not messing around for 2018. Late last night, in a big-time trade, they added former Broncos Pro Bowl cornerback Aqib Talib in exchange for a fifth-round pick. This was several days in the making for the former Broncos star. First, Broncos had talked to the 49ers, but that was not one of Talib's preferred locations, as far as I'm told. No, he only wanted to play two places, for Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots, or in Los Angeles for the Rams and Wade Phillips, his former defensive coordinator. Phillips told me in Indianapolis, I love all my corners, and here is another one for him to love. And now the Rams, in a revamped defensive backfield, have Aqib Talib, Marcus Peters from the Kansas City Chiefs, and Sam Shields, formerly of the Packers.
It should be mandatory that team does Hard Knocks. No, unfortunately, they're not going to because you can't have a playoff team do it. And I think they did it just two seasons ago. But, man, if you had a Netflix series that was called like a buddy show, a reality show that was called, Marcus and Aqib, I would watch that. I'd sign me up. It'd be worth the money following those guys and on their off-the-field antics.
Does it frustrate you that L.A. only needed to give up a fifth-round pick to get Aqib Talib and you don't have him?
Yeah, in theory, but they weren't going to pay that salary. What is it, $11 million?
That's right.
So, I mean, I know it's short cost in terms of what they gave away for him, but the Patriots weren't going to pay him $11 million next year.
Right, so as Mike Reese points out, the Rams' willingness to pick up Talib's contract, he has 2 years and $19 million remaining, was something the Patriots were unlikely to do. Talib would have fit nicely opposite Stephon Gilmore in the Patriots' defensive backfield, as three-year starter Malcolm Butler is expected to depart. As it stands now, the Pats project to have Eric Rowe in that spot.
Yay.
With Jonathan Jones and Cyrus Jones recovering from injuries. Reese writes that there will be other options for the team to consider. For example, with Talib no longer an option, would the team eye Richard Seymour if he's released by the Seahawks, which happened today? Like most situations, economics would be a factor, as the Patriots seem to have higher priorities. With about $22 million in salary cap space at this time, the club is exploring re-signing starting left tackle Nate Solder, which would be a big-ticket item and looks like the first domino. One way or the other, that will shape how the team approaches free agency. Receiver Danny Amendola also will take up salary cap space if he's back with the club. Also, with top corner Steph Gilmore having a $12.5 million cap charge for 2018, the highest on defense, The Pats would figure to have limits for what they would be willing to absorb cap-wise elsewhere at that position. So while they might conceivably have interest in Sherman if he was released, an equally important question is whether Sherman would be interested in them at a more modest contract level. If they can get him cheap. Otherwise, no, which is what Reese is saying, and I don't think they're going to get him cheap. There's too many teams out there who would want Richard Sherman.
So then it comes down to him. Like, would he be willing to do it? So, like, and to me, that's how they're going to get the player if they appeal to him. If they appeal to him on that level, because they're not going to outbid people. We know that. We know that. But he's a good fit for them at this point because of the Achilles thing.
And Nate Solder, Scott Zolak, has heard that there are a couple teams, good teams with a lot of money who are interested in Solder big time to the tune of $13, $14 million a year. And that's just leaving out the bigger part of which is how much is in the bonus, how much is up front, how much is the check that they have to write up front, the real money. And I told you this. I mean, I think they should re-sign him. I want them to re-sign Solder. I don't know if they're going to go to the level that he's going to get on the market. So, a lot of dominoes to fall. Sort of interesting how they're going to piece it all together. Because if they want to improve, if they want to add, something has to give. That means Solder. That means Brandon Cooks. That means Gronkowski. That means something. And look, if you give me a cocktail napkin, I can figure out how to fit it all under the cap. That's not the problem. But there's a money issue there for some reason, even though they've been a low-spending team here the last 4 years. Apparently, there's a give-and-take down there this year. So, we'll see. It feels like something has to give if they're going to add. Otherwise, just re-signing Nate Solder, which is necessary, I don't know how excited I'm going to be. Because that just brings you right back to level, as we've discussed. So, you can weigh in on that, whatever you want here, on an agenda-free Friday. Let's go back to the phones. Longest order of wait, Sean in Maine on Jaylen Brown. Go ahead, Sean.
Well, thanks for taking my call, guys. Great show. This call is smarter than Dakota, but I'm not going to call you guys Jamokes. He was right on, though, with Marcus Smart. But if you watch Jaylen Brown attack the basket, he's not hanging on the rim on purpose. That's a world-class athlete that was attacking the rim. And if he was trying to hang on to the rim, just to hang on to the rim, he wouldn't have fallen like that. His momentum carried him right through. So
what was he trying to
do? That's my read on that.
Yeah, but what was he trying to do?
What do you mean, what was he trying to do?
I'm asking you. You said he wasn't trying to hang on the rim. What was he trying to do?
He was attacking the basket like you would want him to, and his momentum, if he went up soft and just laid it in and the ball bounced out the back of the rim, you guys would have called him being soft by not attacking the rim. He flushed the ball. He was flying ahead of Wiggins and just flushed the ball. And was, if you look at it, his body momentum takes him under the backboard.
Yes, so what was he trying to do?
What do you mean, what was he trying to do?
So, Sean, you're telling me he can't dunk the ball without grabbing the rim?
His momentum, Maz, was carrying him past there.
Right,
and
why not?
And his hand slipped off. And
so what?
And there's not much you're going to be able to do there. But he shouldn't have went for a two-handed dunk in the first place. That was my thing, because occasionally it can go wrong for you like it did last night.
But who's to say he can't dunk and keep going underneath the rim?
He can.
Yeah, with one hand.
Of course you can.
But with two hands, especially a guy who's somewhat spindly like Brown.
No, of course you can. Dunk it and there's such a momentum carry you underneath the basket into the stanchion. I mean, that's not a great result either. I think he felt Wiggins was going to undercut him, and he didn't. And that's sort of maybe what Grandy was doing with his call, too, where Grandy in the call said he got undercut by Wiggins. He didn't. But maybe he felt that Wiggins was coming underneath. Or it's, you know, I feel like there's more hanging on the rim than there's been in recent years. And it's just sort of, I don't know. I mean, I don't blame him because I see a lot of guys do something similar. He just slipped and it could have gone horribly wrong. Thank God it didn't.
I still don't know what that guy's problem was. Have we called Jaylen Brown soft? Have we done that?
No. Murray's kind of blamed. Murray's take
I said
is...
that, look, I'm glad that he's okay, and it was terrifying. But now that he's okay, I can say he's to blame. Like, going for a two-handed dunk, a guy his size, like, if you get a little bit more meat on his bones, okay, he's probably not going to lose the momentum and then fall on his back the way that he did. Just go with one hand, man. Like, you're going to end up killing yourself.
Here's Roger in New Hampshire on a Sox take. Why don't we do a Sox take here on Agenda Free Friday? Go, Roger.
Hey, yes, this is from Maz, our baseball guru. What is your take on what's going to happen to Blake Schwehut this year?
I think they're going to keep him. I think he's on the opening day roster. I think I think Brock Holt is gone. That's what I think.
Right, but what about do you think they're going to carry three catchers then?
Yes, because I don't think Schwehut is a true third catcher.
Oh, I've been watching the last three times they've been on TV. He's been impressing me every single time with the throws to second base, and you can laugh like you want to laugh about it. But I'm a baseball nut. And he's been doing that great spring training. And we don't need Sandy Leon. He's slow as hell. And, you know, he can't go from first to third on a base hit to right field, which Swihart can do.
Okay, Roger, thanks for the call. How come our baseball callers all sound like they've just taken their teeth out?
Because they have.
And I say that with all the... I love Roger. Great call, great observations. I just...
Well, first of all, anybody under the age of 50 isn't watching a spring training game.
You okay? Know what I mean, though? I mean, like, they've literally just taken their dentures.
Or if they do, they get shamed.
Yeah. But I'm telling you, you know what I mean? If Swihart could become the leading starting catcher, but out of the gate, they're going to play him at first. They're going to play him in left field.
I was going to say, so wait, has he been playing all over the place in these games?
Yes.
Has he played second?
He hasn't yet. They're going to catch, at least not that I'm aware of. They've been catching him a lot here early in camp, but they also have been moving him around, and I think they don't view him as purely a catcher. You know, I think they look at him as a guy they can move around, and he's too good offensively to give up on now.
The phone's been ringing off the hook, though, apparently, from other teams calling about him. Shouldn't they try to get some starting pitching?
No.
Okay.
No.
Why so definitive?
They don't have to trade Blake Swihart to get a starting pitcher.
For the 23rd guy in your roster?
There's a million guys out on the market, and I know they don't want to go over the tax number either. But find the next Doug Fister. Go find that guy for $1 million. You shouldn't have to trade a prospect like this. Okay. And if Swihart plays well, first of all, his stock right now is low. So get it. If you're going to move him, get his stock high and then get a real player for him.
Okay, folks, there's crap falling out of the sky, and we're powerless to stop it. We're clueless to stop it. That is the subject of this week's edition of The Fuppets, Hardy's Brainchild. And I have to say, this might be my favorite of all time.
It's because it's about you.
Yeah, maybe that's it. No, frankly, what it is, and if you're watching it live, you'll know what I'm talking about. Hardy has added Jimmy Stewart as a character. And when you get to see them, every time they reveal, Hardy reveals Stewart behind the glass there and his puppet, I spit out what's ever in my mouth. So that could be any manner of things. But whatever's in my kisser gets spat out every time Hardy cuts to Stewart on the Fuppets. And there is so this is a classic one. This is a classic edition of the Fuppets. We're going to play it right out of the break. So it'll be ready to go right out of the commercial break. You'll hear it on the radio. You'll see it on NBC Sports Boston. We played in the final word, but it's so good we got to run it twice. We'll do that right after these words.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's Felger and Mazz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mazz.
Headline: Uncontrolled space station to crash into Earth in early April, experts say.
Mm-hmm. It's a renegade lab.
Shut up. This is not a meteor from outer space. This is something we put up there.
Yeah.
That's in near Earth orbit, not outer space.
Yeah, I frankly like hearing this because.
Listen! It's coming down in late 2017. No, whoops. Actually, March of 2018. Now it's early April. We have no idea.
Yes, this is what we get as payback. I hate NASA and space travel in general. So
Shut up, Murray.
Can we aim it towards Connecticut?
You put the thing up there. It's not coming from outer space. It's coming from near Earth orbit. And you can't tell within 12 days when it's going to hit?
First of all, I didn't do anything. This was the Chinese government that did this.
Do you know how clueless we are as humans when it comes to these things?
Yes.
Scientists also haven't been able to narrow down the crash zone, which is expected to be between the 43rd north and the 43rd south latitudes. It's basically from Buffalo to Cape Town, South Africa.
All around the globe! A big band around the middle of the globe.
You're not told this often enough because the government knows that if you knew, if people actually knew...
So you realize this has happened before, right?
Shut up. Watch it on Facebook, Twitter, whatever. All
Instagram.
Of our social media platforms. Instagram, the Felger and Mazz page on Instagram.
Yours soon, hopefully.
Yeah, there you go. We'll put it up on my social media platform. All of that, okay? You just... The Stewart puppet is just... I don't know why it works. And then so Murray puts this in front of me, just in a related story, because this is what sort of gets me fired up, is that people think we somehow have the technology to shoot asteroids or these things out of space, like
Correct.
We're some sort of movie.
Yes, this was posted on Newsweek just today.
We do.
Newsweek, we don't. We think we do, because we watch these fracocked movies and we read these books and we get, you know, yeah, the Martian, yeah, easily, yeah, we go to Mars. You just convert CO2 to O2 and yeah, it's fine. And we can figure out the orbits and yeah, no problem. Yeah, easy. We read and watch all this crap. We think it's like that easy. But you buy in. Newsweek. Scientists have designed a nuclear weapon-wielding spacecraft powerful enough to deflect a 1,600-foot asteroid currently circling the sun. Oh, it's currently circling the sun.
Try getting close to that one.
Set for multiple close encounters with Earth. Earth.
Better be wearing shorts if you're going close to the sun.
Set for multiple close encounters with Earth over the next 100 years, there is a chance, however small, that the asteroid Bennu could one day collide with our planet. Don't worry, says Newsweek. NASA has a plan to save us all.
Yep.
And it involves nukes. Like, this is what I'm talking about. This Chinese space station we put up there, it's in near-Earth orbit. It ain't orbiting the sun. It's orbiting us. It's right there. And we have no idea when or where it's going to land. We don't know within 12 days when it's going to land. We don't know within tens of thousands of miles where it's going to land.
I'll take my chances.
And we're going to... NASA has a nuclear weapon-wielding spacecraft that's going to shoot a 1,600-foot asteroid out of the sky.
It's a real-life version of Asteroids, video game.
My ass. My asteroid, exactly. Pew, pew. Kiss my asteroid with this one.
What's the name of the ship?
No shot.
Duke.
I don't get it.
Duke the Nuke. Go. Just shut up and go, will you?
NASA lists 78 dates. Oh, only 78. On which Bennu has a tiny chance of colliding with Earth. Taken together, they give an impact risk of 1 in 2,700. Small but not impossible. So 1 in 2,700. Asteroid impacts can be devastating. No, really? You think? Newsweek, these geniuses, this is what people don't realize, so I guess they do have to put it in the story. Do you realize, folks, that some 66 million years ago, the impact of a 9-mile asteroid is widely believed to have wiped out most of Earth's dinosaurs? That asteroid, Maz?
Chicxulub.
And it now is the Chicxulub crater there in Mexico. In 2013, this is the one I always reference, the one in 2013, a 65-foot asteroid entered the skies above Russia, exploding over Shablinsk Oblast. The blast caused extensive damage and injured nearly 1,500 people. No one died. But that's my example. No one knew that was coming. No one knew where it was coming. That was one 65 feet long. 65 feet! And when it came careening through the skies of Russia, they looked up and said, ow.
Das vidanya.
We didn't see that one coming. And it's like,
I remember that. That was cool.
Yes, it was cool. Except no one knew it. All of a sudden, there's a burning fireball careening into cities in Russia. And all the scientists are like, oh, go figure that.
See, once again, you're sensationalizing it. It landed in like a cow pasture.
We didn't see that one. No, the point is that we don't see them. And we can't do anything about them. That's the point.
That one wasn't that big.
It landed in a cow pasture, but what if it didn't?
But it did.
But what if it did? What if it did? What if it hit the Metro West Boston? We're cooked, Maz.
Well, who lives out there?
We're cooked.
Just bring an umbrella. You did in the video.
We're done. Scientists from NASA, the National Nuclear Security Administration, and two Energy Department weapons labs have designed a spacecraft. Oh, yeah.
Duke.
To deflect an asteroid. Their research was published recently and blah, blah, blah. Called the Hypervelocity Asteroid Mitigation Mission for Emergency Response. No, oh God, this is so great. This is such fantasy. Dude, this is such fantasy. These people have no clue. Listen.
Wait, what's it called again?
Again, Hypervelocity Asteroid Mitigation Mission for Emergency Response, or...
Hammer. See, I told you it had a name.
Hammer. The Impactor spacecraft would be deployed to deflect a small asteroid with its own bulk. In certain cases, however, it would set off a nuclear weapon. My ass. No chance.
I mean, if that happens, General Zod's going to be free.
It's just fantasy.
He doesn't get that one, Jimmy.
I do, of course, Superman.
Oh.
Unfortunately for us vulnerable Earthlings, Hammer is a plan which may never be built. You think? We can't raise enough money to fill the potholes in Murray's neighborhood.
Hammer.
This is what makes space and all this stuff so unrealistic.
I like Duke better.
We're trillions of dollars in debt. Try raising money for anything. Now we're going to get people to pony up more tax dollars for a spaceship for Ben Affleck to go fly into space to deflect an asteroid?
Tell me where I can protest to make sure none of my tax dollars go to that.
Bruce Willis.
No chance.
Ben Affleck.
No chance. No chance. They can't raise a dime for
good.
This stuff.
Good.
Here's our only hope. Honestly, because I'll do 4 hours on this if you want, and you don't want.
Clearly.
But this is my last thought.
I actually do.
Our last great hope is Bezos and Zuckerman and...
The Amazon and the Facebook nerd.
Yes, that's who's going to get us into space. And that's who's going to create all this stuff, is the guys with tens and hundreds of billions of dollars, because they have the money, the governments don't. We don't. We're tapped. The governments, NASA, we have nothing. But
who's the Tesla nerd?
Zuckerman, Bezos, that guy, whoever, the Bitcoin guy.
Musk.
Yes,
yeah, Elon Musk.
Elon Musk.
Yeah. Elon Musk.
And he's already, and Richard Branson, the British guy, like they've already started. They've already started this stuff. They've started their own space agencies, if you will.
So Hammer is remote controlled, right?
I didn't even get that far in the story. Hammer.
Hammer. Because if they're looking for someone actually driving into the asteroid, I can give them some names.
Okay, so stop putting these stories in front of me. If you don't want me doing it, here's an update.
No, I do.
90 seconds, no commercials.
Felger and Mazz, the Sports Hub.